We are about to begin. Please take your seats. Madame la Commissaire.
Dear Commissioner, dear MEPs, dear President of the Coalition, dear President of the Coalitions, ladies and gentlemen, first of all, I would like to thank the Presidency of the European Coalitions for taking this initiative so that all together we can promote cultural diversity, which is exactly what we have been doing for quite a long time. It's always an honour for me to be in a position to welcome you in the House of European Citizens that is promoting, among many other things, cultural diversity. European unity has never been synonymous with uniformity. As well as diversity, which was never synonymous with irreconcilable differences. These are things that we strongly believe in, and these are strong beliefs that we assert and that we will keep asserting if need be, decades after decades, simply because cultural diversities are part of our intangible cultural heritage. And this is certainly the source of living actions that can be read, that can be seen, that can be watched, that can be heard, that can be observed. And we are here simply because we refuse the standardization of cultural expressions. We are here simply because we do not want the potential, the digital potential, to be used to the detriment of those creative of us. We are here to institute a virtuous link between creation on the one hand and the digital technologies on the other end. I no longer speak about a digital revolution in so far as this digital revolution is now behind us. We really should make sure that we rise to the challenge that we are presented with. This digital tools offer wide-ranging opportunities for exchange, but they can also constitute barriers. And it is up to politicians to make sure that the cultural expressions get the support that they deserve. That is why the maintenance of territoriality of rights is a must, because it's important to ensure the existence of a structure enabling the financing of works at the European scale. As a citizen from Luxembourg, I would like to say how proud I am of my country, because suppression of this principle of state aid has made it possible for film, for the filmmaking industry in Luxembourg to pursue a strong life. Cro Blanc is a movie that has been a co-production, as most films in Luxembourg, with France and the US. The filmmaking fund in Luxembourg having supported it, and The Breadwinner, which is yet another co-production between Luxembourg, Canada and Ireland, has been shortlisted for the Oscars. You see that even if Luxembourg is a very small country, there is a lot that can be achieved. And this shows us that we should be brave. We can be creative. We have these works, and we have to make sure that we continue promoting these works to make sure that these works are seen. And this afternoon, we'll be talking about my market access. We'll be talking about transparency. We'll be talking about the fair remuneration of artists. We will be talking about the fair distribution of financial contribution to creation, as well as the fair representation of European works, as well as the implementation of a principle that is enshrined in the UNESCO convention that dates back to 2005, that speaks about technological neutrality, knowing that this technological neutrality should apply to just every medium. Europe should ensure there is a level playing ground between the different stakeholders, and Europe should also make sure to give as much of a profile as possible to these works, be it on the different channels, on the digital media, as well as part of an on-demand service. Dear Commissioner, this is exactly what we're going to talk about this afternoon with experts who are strong advocates of their culture as well as the culture of others. Thank you very much, dear Commissioner, for coming. Maria and I go back a long way. And I know, Maria, that you are very fond of Robert Wise, the filmmaker, as well as his three P's: passion, patience, and perseverance. This is something that I learned from you. So those three P's are also the very characteristics of our commissioner. She's a woman of passion, patience, and perseverance. And this is exactly what we need. The very first struggle will be the one of the media program in the framework of the multi-annual financial prospects. You will certainly need those three P's. But you should know that we are behind you, and we will help you that these three P's help creation, cinema, as well as cultural diversity. And now I give you the floor, Maria. Thank you very much, Vivian, dear President, ladies and gentlemen. First and foremost, I would like to thank you. It is an honor, really, for me to be here with you, because what unites us is one of the most noble causes. What is more noble than defending the cause of culture? Dear Vivian, I would like to thank you for co-organizing this event, but most and foremost for the commitment you have taken. It shows it's important to defend our values and principles with energy. You are a role model to me, and I simply would like to say thank you to you for your inspiration, for your support, and for your encouragement. If you do not mind, I would like now to move to the nitty-gritty. At this time of ever-growing populism, culture is a pillar that is essential, especially if we wanted to support our values and our fundamental rights. Europe has a lot to bring to the global cultural diversity. Culture is the very fabric of our lives and of our societies. Culture shapes our identities and our ways of thinking. Culture gives us the sense of belonging to a community, while giving us the opportunity of projecting ourselves into the future. Like Claude Lelouch was saying back in Dijon, culture makes it possible for the European citizen of not being afraid of what he or she fears the most. That is why the leaders of the 27 EU member states and European institutions signed the Rome Declaration. We have taken a commitment to work, King, for a European Union that promotes cultural diversity. By bringing together culture and the digital technologies, this particular event is a golden opportunity that we can use in order to show that we should not distrust technologies, but these technologies can be seen as a source of optimism and prosperity. It is true that the digital technologies can unleash a lot of energies that can help bringing together the different parts of the society. The digital technologies are the main tool that we can use in order to create, combine and promote our cultures so that we can learn from one another and so that we can all together dream of a better future. More concretely, through the digital policy, I have two objectives in mind. First, to make it possible for the European cultures and for the creative sectors to take full part in the digital era. We no longer talk about the digital revolution. Second, to make sure that the digital technologies contribute to a cultural creation-friendly environment that would benefit the majority and not only a happy few. When I was appointed Commissioner for Digital Economy and Society, I started working on the definition of our strategy that we called Digital for a Culture. This strategy draws its energy from the European Year of Cultural Heritage, which is 2018. This is a unique opportunity of combining culture and the digital technologies. We should fully harness this potential that we are offered so as to make sure that we give the culture an even bigger profile. The digital strategy for a culture is based on 6 pillars. The first pillar is access, the guarantee of access to a more wide ranging and democratic culture. We would like to make contributions in order to support, by supporting innovative models based on a tighter collaboration between artists, performers, sales agents or distributors. The second pillar is promotion, commercialization, as well as the upgrading of our cultural heritage. Let us make the most of this European year in order to put forward what Europe has to bring. We could, for example, have a European film-making week where films would be made available to the different schools in the European Union. We also consider the creation of an online directory, making it possible at EU level to have access to an online directory of European films, and I would be eager to get your views on this. This directory would initially include a list of European films and would primarily be aimed at distributors, cinema operators, or on-demand service providers. It could also be used as a B2B tool, making it possible for professionals to know where the films are being shown in the territory thanks to a search engine that would be associated to the directory. This directory could be connected to a central platform that would be accessible to just every user. It would no longer be a B2B, but it would be a B2C tool that could be used in order to inform just every user of the legal possibilities related to films or cinematographic works. And I would be really eager to get your views on this. We have agreed on a deadline of October, and this is the very first time that I'm talking about this. This is really a premiere, and I wanted to give you a sneak preview of this because it's important for us to know whether this is an appropriate proposal, what is it that we should not do, and what is it that could really constitute the value added by such a measure. The third pillar is a production production and distribution at the time of convergence, with a view to promoting other forms of storytelling, as well as the possible use of big data, as well as the need to strengthen the link between the content and the audience. This is something not to be forgotten. The fourth pillar is the valorization of talents and skills. We could envisage coaching and mentoring programs involving young people and seasoned experts. This is certainly not a new idea, but we would like to give it more visibility. We would like to give it more value added. We would like it to promote more synergies. The fifth pillar is access to funding. We are exploring the possibility of creating a financial tool on a public-private basis with a view to supporting the development of large-scale projects. And finally, the sixth pillar is international cooperation, where we want to exercise a power of influence beyond the European borders by ensuring, for example, the dissemination of development audiovisual projects. As you've seen, this strategy revolves around a certain number of initiatives and events for which the cooperation and the collaboration of the European Parliament is also a must. This digital strategy for culture will support the ongoing debate on how to best support the creative industry, as well as the cultural heritage actions as a part of the upcoming media program. But I can already say it to you, as I've been saying now for the past few months, you can count on me for defending the media program budget. I will fight tooth and nail for it. What is important is to show how much this program has been a success story. Significant breakthrough has been made possible thanks to this media program. Of course, we'll have to review some instruments. There are way too many schemes. We might have to focus on more strategic objectives, but as far as I'm concerned, the media program will get the place it deserves in the EU budget, and you can count on me for this. Today, we started the evaluation of the media program as it stands. We discuss the shape this program is going to take from 2020 onwards. But it has been impressive to see how it has been possible for creators to put forward their creative freedom, their freedom of expression, so as to reach out to millions and millions of citizens, not only in Europe. And the two general objectives, that is to say, cultural diversity and European competitiveness, will remain crucial. And this goes hand in hand with the work that we have done with a view to motivating and rewarding creation through a certain number of reforms. And I'm sure you will discuss them today. One of them is the reform of the copyright, the reform of the directive on the audiovisual service media. We know how complicated these topics are. But the objective is to make it possible for cultural industries to reach out to new audiences, but also to adapt to the reality of the new digital era. As far as the different legislative cases and records are concerned, I will say a couple of words on each of them. First, the copyright reform. The challenge is something that is common knowledge. The use and the technologies are ever developing. Access to data is getting a never-increasing role in the society. You have the appearance of new actors copyright should remain an appropriate tool that is used in order to motivate and reward creation. By recognizing and valorizing creation and its investments, copyright contributes significantly to cultural diversity, and this is done to the benefit of all, and not only to the cultural and creative industries, even though they account for millions of jobs and a significant part of the GDP. This is something that we should keep on repeating and that we should make sure that we talk about. I welcome also other regulations which have been adopted. And here I would like to spend a couple of minutes on the regulation concerning the portability of contents. In April, we will make sure that this regulation is enforced. After the 1st of April, we will make sure that European citizens keep their subscription to online services irrespective of the EU country that they find themselves in. I also welcome the transposition of the Marrakesh Treaty. Thank you to the European Parliament for your massive support last week in Strasbourg. This will make it possible for millions of people with a visual impairment to have access to content. I must also speak about the directive on audiovisual services. This is an essential proposal in the framework of the Single Digital Market Directive. Our objective is to adapt the regulation to a new audiovisual environment. It will be important for viewers and more particularly for young people to migrate from the traditional world of TV to an online world. The principle of country of origin should remain the cornerstone of the directive. This is the principle that makes a reality of this single digital market, and it should be maintained. There are other proposals that are aimed at strengthening the obligations of the on-demand video producers. I've been paying a close attention to trilogues. There is a fifth one that is coming. Thank you very much to the European Parliament for your support. As you know, in the initial proposal, the quota had been set at 20%. Two co-legislators, Parliament and Council, agreed on 30%. But it would be most interesting to get your views and to get your reactions concerning this kind of change. Finally, I'd like to conclude. As far as I'm concerned, the digital strategy for culture, the media program, the copyright package, as well as the directive on audiovisual services are elements that are essential for making sure that the marriage between the digital technologies and culture is a long-lasting marriage. I personally invested myself in this task because what is at stake is not only the competitiveness of the European content industry. What is at stake is the sustainability of our European model, of our very societies that are based on diversity and on democratic values. It is thanks to the digital technologies that we will win this battle of a high quality cultural creation that is accessible to as many as possible. This is more than ever what Europe needs. Thank you very much for your attention.
Madame le Commissaire,
dear Commissioner, all those who are here for the very first time and who get to know you for the very first time have not been disappointed. I can assure you, because you not only carried out an analysis of the different files that are now on the table and for which you hope to make significant progress soon, because as you said, time flies, but you gave, you made also a gift by giving us this sneak preview of this innovative distribution model. I guess that in our second round table, this is going to be much talked about, and I'm sure that we will insist on the value such an initiative would represent. We will certainly help you to make sure that this is a gift to the European citizens so that they can have access, they can have a better access to their cultural heritage. Thank you, really. Thank you for your analysis of what European diversity is and means for European citizens. And thank you very much for those for repeating those words spoken by Claude Lelouch. The European diversity, cultural diversity, makes it possible for European citizens not to be afraid of what they fear. This is really beautiful, and this should be the really the backbone of at the backbone of what we do, and you can count on us. Thank you very much for giving us this impetus. Thank you very much.
Welcome again, everyone, and thank you for coming to join us in so many numbers. We really appreciate it because we also know you have come from far. Come from far and wide. Okay. I'd like to reiterate the thanks of Madame Reding to Commissioner Gabriel for joining us today and for being so heartily engaged in the agendas which are close to all of our hearts and activities. And just to say again, to hear of new proposals, which I'm sure we are all digesting and are going to be discussing later, we are much appreciative. And one gets the feeling of a commissioner really very, very engaged in the important legislations that we are all living through and trying to influence this coming year. I'm Carol Tung, I should have said that at the beginning, Chair of the European Coalitions for Cultural Diversity. It's an umbrella organisation of 13 national coalitions of diverse cultural organisations. Our primary mission is to promote the principles of the 2005 UNESCO Convention, which is ratified by the European Union and indeed by individual member states. Do join us. I hope you can all find a seat. Thank you. I'm also a former MEP and former Socialist Group Coordinator for Culture and Media. So some of our debates I have been following and been actively involved in for the last 20 or more years. Today we're going to debate in this panel within the context of the Copyright Directive, about creators, rights holders, and cultural professionals' wishes, among which is remuneration for their work online and improvement in their relationship with platforms, for example. We've heard and we know that this is a year of important decisions for the future of our creators, creative industries, and for cultural diversity, which is so important in that it underpins our values, identities, and in fact the cohesion in our societies, which in fact underpins democracy itself. If we cannot express ourselves, if we cannot see ourselves and our stories on screen, in our books, through our music, our poetry, how can we understand each other? How can we develop public policy that we all need and depend on to thrive as human beings? We're very polite, I think. We all call it the value gap. Some might use stronger language. I would say it's a maldistribution of internet revenues. That doesn't come from me. That once came from a very big telecoms operator, believe it or not. Jonathan Taplin, in his recent book, Move Fast and Break Things, has estimated that the creative industries, creators and professionals, transfer every year $50 billion a year to platforms in value. We can pause and reflect on that. Authors, for example, in the UK earn on average no more than the minimum wage, £12,000 a year. We have media and entertainment workers who claim that they have to often sign take-it-or-leave-it contracts without royalties or fair share of revenues. We have traditional television channels who are now having to compete for talent, for rights, with new platforms, while simultaneously losing a lot of their advertising income. We hear from musicians and the music sector that they believe they receive only a tiny proportion of what some platforms make from online advertising. In this session, I hope we'll be exploring different ways to ensure that creators, producers and rights holders of cultural content and performers and artists are properly protected and remunerated. I hope our speakers can offer some solutions that we need to put forward to achieve a balance in the relation between creators, cultural workers and online platforms. So I will try and introduce everybody. Jean-Paul Salomé, first of all, who is a recognised French screenwriter, director and producer. He's worked with Claude Lelouch and he has released many feature films such as Les Femmes de l'Homme with Sophie Marceau in the leading role et Je fais le mort in 2013 with François Damien. He has also been president of Unifrance from 2013 to 17. Helge Trüppel, member of European Parliament from Germany and the Green Party, who needs very little introduction in this house, who since 2004 has been vice chair of the European Parliament's Committee on Culture and Education, and someone in this house who has amazing understanding of the challenges of the creative sectors in Europe and has always been an enormous supporter of creators and creative workers. Helen Smith, Executive Chair of Impala, an independent music companies association. She is helping put thousands of independent companies and artists on the map of Europe by leveraging their collective strength. Nicole Schulz, known to everyone here, I'm sure, Director of Epo Artis, an organisation that represents and defends 36 European performers' collective management organisations from 26 different countries. And finally, but not least, Anne Bergmont-Tahon, Director of the Federation of European Publishers, an umbrella organisation of book publishers' associations in the EU. The FEP represents 29 national associations of book publishers of the EU and of the European Economic Area. And again, last but not least, I'm delighted that Giuseppe Abamonti, Director of Media Policy at DG Connect, has agreed to join us today, who I would like to bring in towards the end after everyone has spoken, so he's able to not only give his perspective but also respond to what he's heard. So I'd like to start, if I may, Jean-Paul, si je peux. Alors, est-ce que vous pouvez nous dire ce que vous, les autres,
Could you please tell us what the audiovisual authors are expecting from the platforms? We're expecting money to make our movies. Now, let me come back to the quote made by Mrs. Redding about of Robert Wise, who said that a filmmaker's life is made of passion, perseverance, and patience. It's not easy to live out of your passion. It's not easy to be perseverant and to have patience. And today, well, the industry in France, in Europe, and throughout the world is evolving very fast. And we have to think about how we can make sure that remuneration of authors can also evolve on the basis of distribution of films. Now, talking about the French system, that is, in a way, a very positive system. Authors have been paid for their work. There are minimum requirements when you write, when you make a movie. There are also copyrights that are related to the distribution of films for television, for cinemas. Now, Hertzian TV, private TVs have less audience than in the past because there are so many other platforms that can now be used. So it is quite, it is a good idea to increase these revenue. It is totally legitimate for authors to know that when their movies are distributed on the platforms, well, beyond the price which is given to distributor, their work should also be paid for. This is important because it is linked to the market. If your movie is bought and distributed, well, this is not a system of grants. It means that your film has got some value because it is distributed, and once there is this distribution, I think that the creator of the work has to be paid for in a way or in another, in a proper way. This system is indeed changing. It is evolving because of the high number of platforms. It is also important to remain connected to the public. Very often the French cinema is being pointed at for being too much subsidized. Back in the days, there were DVDs, videos. These do not exist anymore. Now the future is SVOD, apparently. But let's make sure that what is applied for videos, DVDs, Hertzian broadcast can also be shifted to the new broadcasting means that are the ones of the future. Because if we want to be concrete and logical, well, we do see that broadcasting of films in cinemas is getting harder and harder. I know this is another debate, but broadcasting works in Europe means that, well, there are more and more American movies to the detriment of European movies. So I think there is something that should be done here. The only business that is progressing is the one through the platforms, happening through the platforms. The international market is getting very difficult for European works. Now, putting these movies on tomorrow's platforms means also proper compensation, because, you know, authors do not stop living in between movies. A filmmaker, if he or she is lucky enough to make a movie every 3 to 4 years, which is already a very good average, you know, not everyone is Woody Allen on the market, and not everyone makes so many films. A filmmaker usually, on average, makes a movie every 3 to 4 years. Now, when you are working as an employee for the filmmaking, well, this period of time is very short. You also need to think about your next movie. You need to find producer. You need to find the financial resources that will help you making your movies. I have made some successful movies, so I'm lucky enough to be paid in an appropriate manner, but I have to read books, meet authors to think about the next movie, and I'm not paid for that. But I'm paid through, copyright that I get thanks to broadcasting of my movies. Now, I was making some calculation when writing my tax form. I think that the years I do not make any film, the salary that I get from my copyright equals 30 to 40% of the revenue that I get when I make films. So it's enough to make a proper living for me. But, well, I think we have here good arguments to say that with the future platforms such as Netflix that broadcast films in France and will broadcast in French movies in Spain, Germany, Italy, etc., and in European countries, well, these platforms should also pay the authors, authors' company for the copyright. It's good that they buy the film to the producer, but for us, if you want to get your part of the cake, you have to be either successful or have good lawyers. So this fair compensation, should be efficient, transparent, and I think it is quite easy to explain this ecosystem to the newcomers. This ecosystem is part of the reflexes of our national producers, of our, because they know that the authors will be compensated for the films that are broadcast on M6, Canal Plus, etc. So getting rid of this revenue would be shameful. You could not think of reducing the compensation of in a proportion between 30 and 40%. There are not many professions for which you decrease financial compensation, and it should not be the case for authors and creators. So I think we have to fight. We have to continue fighting. The European authors have to, continue struggling. And beyond money, there is also the matter of the offer, the market. Your film is broadcast, so it is fair to get compensation for it. It's part of a business, and there's no reason that this business does not compensate authors in a fair manner. I hope I was clear. Thank you.
You started with talking about passion, and that was a passionate defense, I think, of equitable remuneration. And I presume you're referring to the copyright directive. Nicole, what are performers' expectations? What challenges are they facing when their works are disseminated online?
Thank you, Carol, and thank you for the invitation to contribute. Sure. We're always very keen on contributing on any debate that involves around the better distribution of the economic value. And to those three P's, we would like to add a fourth one, and that's P. I think Jean-Pierre will agree with me there. So we have a similar point of view, the audiovisual authors and the performers. We see that, of course, if we look at the acquis, that the primary goal of the EU legislator has always been to protect performers and to ensure that there was a reward for them at the end of the day. The same has also been the case for on-demand exploitations of their recordings or performances. So we performers have been granted in 2001 an exclusive right, but unfortunately in practice it has not been as effective as Jean-Pierre, I think, also explained, for performers. And we would like to have an improvement in that. The contractual practices are that performers are signing all the rights to the producer. That's the way the business works. It works well. But there is no contractual freedom, because contractual freedom means that you can negotiate at arm's length. That's not always the case for performers who either have agreed to the terms that are being given, or their freedom is that they can choose to reject the contract and not work and not have their future, their new engagement. So the majority of performers will sign a contract for one-off fee, and they will not have any further additional remuneration for on-demand use of their performance. So, for as Jean-Pierre has already explained, we have a growing market, and we would like that performers take a share in this, and that they are able to earn a decent living from that. We've had, of course, a lot of hopes with the Copyright Directive and the discussions of the Commission of including a chapter on fair remuneration. But we've been quite disappointed. In particular, with the provisions on Article 14 to 16, because they are very weak and in essence will not mean additional remuneration for performers. For transparency, it's quite clear, it's very nice as a toolbox, general toolbox, but transparency for the majority of performers means very little, because their rights are transferred, so whether they know how much money is made afterwards is irrelevant to them. On Article 15 for the contract adjustment, here again, the Commission makes the assumption that performers will be happy to go and challenge their producer in court, which is not the case, because it also can have a negative impact on any future engagement. And it also means that you have to be prepared for a very lengthy and costly court procedure, which most performers were not willing to take. So, of course, these articles can be further improved, and we've made, as part of the AEPO Artists Works Together with three other performance organizations, FIM, FIA, and IO, so it's a coalition representing the visual and audio performers from featured artists to non-featured artists. And we've made some concrete proposals on how to improve it, but the bottom line is still that these provisions will not achieve a remuneration for performers for on-demand use. And it's for that reason that we've put forward a proposal to include an unwaivable right to remuneration, which would be paid by the platforms and would be subject to compulsory collective management. And it's not something we invented ourselves. It's a copy-paste from an EU directive, the rental directive, which has been very useful at the time when there were videotapes. In Germany, there were several millions of euros going to performers, which is now reduced by 80% because there are no longer videotapes in Germany, or very little, if any. But the system itself has worked very well. It's also, in a similar way, working for radio and TV broadcasting. It works very smoothly with collective management. There is one point of call, and that's so. This system of unwaivable remuneration is what we would also like to see applicable for on-demand users. Now, we are very pleased with the efforts of the European Parliament, who have understood that talking about European culture and cultural diversity also means supporting those people down the value chain. and making sure that they can earn a living. In particular, Mrs. Brückel and the work of the Culture Committee, who have already adopted this, to insert this mechanism in the Copyright Directive, also the Industry Committee. There have been several amendments in the Legal Affairs Committee, so we're hoping that here now the discussions will also lead to a compromise ensuring performers will receive a fair remuneration in the years to come.
Thank you very much, Nicole. It's very interesting to hear of actually how things work out in reality for, in the case of your members, artistes, interprètes, performers, and how you've clearly been talking to members of this Parliament in the key committees, and in many cases have heard your case understood. And in that sense, I'd like to turn to Madame Trupel, who has been a very loyal ally of the sector and of all those who work within it. I see you clutching a magazine in...
I will show it to you in 1 minute.
And I think when you see it, you will understand the direction in which Madame Trupel would like to talk. But I would ask if you could reflect on what you heard so far and the sense of how does the Parliament help to create a fair partnership and a balanced relationship.
Thank you. I start with a general approach, what I want to achieve politically with the copyright reform, and very, very general with the regulation of smart digital capitalism, what it's about, and how to shape globalization. And it's absolutely crucial to have progress on that when we have the upcoming elections in March 2019. So it's The Economist, and the title is The New Titans and How to Tame Them. It's about Amazon, Facebook, and Google. So that are the new monopolies on whom we are talking and how to regulate them in a smart way. And it's very interesting that a liberal magazine like The Economist now calls for taming the giants. Some weeks ago, I had the New York Times, and on the first page, American researchers and influential people called, again, on the first page, that they have to regulate their own American new monopolies, which are much more powerful than the old ones, like Hollywood, Coca-Cola, AT&T, Verizon, and so on, and that they have to regulate artificial intelligence because it could be a disaster if there is no real democratic regulation of digital capitalism. That, for me, is the background for all the political things I want to achieve. And that's, of course, about better use of competition law. That means, and Vestager is doing it very bravely, our competition commissioner, because she is making the big giants and the digital ones and the analog ones, Starbucks and IKEA and European companies, of course, are included as well, to pay taxes in the European Union. Now, Google and Facebook announced to go back to the United States to invest there more, and the Americans are pleased, especially Trump, because he says, that's my tax reform about, they come back. But anyway, we have a market of 550 million people. They will not go away from Europe. And therefore, I think that is the one thing what we have to achieve politically. We have to tax them. And we have to impose as proud Europeans on the American monopolies our terms of trade. Next point, and that is copyright reform. We already, as you heard from Nicole, we voted last July on the CULT committee on the copyright reform. It's a quite good vote. Please have a look again, because everything what I want to achieve is done in this CULT vote. Please look at it and spread it. It's very helpful for the URI committee, what we did on the CULT committee. So what I want to achieve and what we achieved on the CULT vote is that we want a licensing obligation for the digital monopolies. If there is commercial use of copyright-protected press articles, that means it's not Creative Commons, they have to be obliged to license and to license and work together with the collective management organizations, which we reformed. I was the rapporteur. I know what I'm talking about. And then if there is a licensing obligation for cultural content, which is copyright protected, uploaded by users and not Creative Commons, they have to do the same. They have been to be obliged to license. That is our duty with the majority in the plenary here in the European Parliament to say to the American boys, Zuckerberg, Terry Brin, and Jeff Bezos and the others, you have to pay if you use our content in the European Union. When we do that with the majority in the Parliament, then we don't need general filtering. We don't have any problem with the pirates' argumentation that we go for a censorship machine because we don't do it. Even the proposal of the Commission does not mean a censorship machine, but the pirates and other NGOs are misusing this point. I think they are mistaken, but it's a huge propaganda machine on the Internet. And therefore, I think when we can say, and that is my compromise with pirate Julia Reda, they have to license for copyright-protected content, then we don't need general filters. That's, for me, a good solution, and the pirates can be happy. Google will not be so very happy, and they will say, oh, when you do that, then we leave the European Union, as we did in Spain with the press magazines. And then I say, okay, go to Russia, to China, to Saudi Arabia, do it with the authoritarian regimes, but then you can't tell us anymore, don't be evil, because then you are evil. So they have an image problem, and when you have a look at the advertisements at the moment of Facebook in Germany, every day, all over the cities in the big newspapers, one-page advertisement, Google is improving, and Facebook is improving. They have got a problem. And I want to make the most of this image problem the digital monopolies are enjoying at the moment. So therefore, I think what we need is a very good narrative. The first one is make use of competition law, because we have competition law in the European Union. It's very much what we are doing every day. So we have to really make it work concerning the digital monopolies of the United States. And I'm very clear, I'm not anti-American. I only want smart regulation, because I'm a liberal, feminist, green politician, and therefore I want good regulation. Next point, as a narrative, what I want to achieve is, as a slogan, give back people control of the Internet, because they don't have it at the moment. Not take back control as a Brexitist, but from a democratic point of view, give back people control of the Internet. We urgently need it. We want to have a say on our digital platforms. So, and when we get that, then we can solve all the other problems. Then it's clear that with Article 11, for the copyright reform, we go for an obligation to license, not for an ancillary copyright. With the value gap, Article 13, we will make very clear that they have to pay, that we urgently need remuneration of our wonderful European creators, all of them writers, authors, musicians, filmmakers, screenwriters, all of them deserve a fair remuneration and a fair pay. And like Coca-Cola has to pay its workers, Google and Facebook and Amazon and Apple have to pay the creators as well. It's only the very old conflict between labor and capital, and we have to solve it in a clever way in the European Union. So, and therefore, it's clear with Articles 14 to 16, we want to bring creators in a better negotiation position. Therefore, we need reform of contract law and an unwaivable right for remuneration, as Nicole said. I support it heavily, and I'm in the process of talking to Axel Voss, the rapporteur in URI for the copyright reform, to go for that. So far, he is a little bit hesitant, like very often, but I hope that we will convince him, because it's only very reasonable to do it. And then my last sentence is, I think what we need is the readiness to deconstruct the freedom narrative of Google, because what they do is very much in their own capitalistic interest. Of course, they use the interest of us users, but not the users shall be tracked or they should, but the platforms must be responsible and they have to pay. That is the very crucial point. We don't sue the individual users, our kids in the schools. No, we make the digital monopolies pay. And that, I think, is a smart idea. And therefore, when they say, oh, what you do is a very stupid, old-fashioned regulation, then we say, no, it's very modern, because we urgently need it. We have to shape globalization and the digital revolution in order to put citizens in a better position because we are concerned about the fate of European people. And then I say again, I would like to tell to Google, don't be evil, please show it to us. And last small story, before Christmas, the vice CEO of Google came to my office. Oh, Mrs. Trüpel, we heard you have some criticism about Google. Yes, sir, you are right. What do you want to achieve? And then I said, paying taxes, obligation to license, and take over responsibility on fake news and hate speech without endangering freedom of press and information and expression, because, of course, we want to have free information. Huh? Don't let them misuse this argument. They can do it with software, algorithms, and human beings, and human beings have to decide what is fake and what is not, and it's their business to pay for that, because they are media companies of new type, and not we as taxpayers. Make them pay. License, pay taxes, and pay for their responsibility. And then he said, this gentleman, vice CEO of Google, ah, Mrs. Trüpel, you are right. In the last decade, we made a lot of mistakes, and we are ready for remedies. Come on, join the club, Mr. Vice CEO of Google. It will be very difficult because they will do everything not to make us to go for laws, but we need laws because otherwise they only go for a deal like with GEMA in Germany on a private level and nobody knows what is in this treaty. Therefore, for democratic reasons, I don't want to have private solutions. I want to have democratic political solutions because you are the citizens of the European Union. Thank you.
Thank you for your passion, Helga. Yeah, I would expect no less. And for also a raft of ideas, which I know, looking around the room, we are all busy digesting because it's not every day we hear all of those brave, brave ideas. Thank you very much, and I know we'll be coming back to them. I'd now like to ask Anne Bergman-Tahon. There's a specific policy in most European countries in the book sector. It's called a fixed price, a prix unique. Do you think it's sufficient protection going forward in the digital economy? Can you explain, for example, why it's been so positive, but also I'm sure we're keen to hear your views about the copyright directive too.
Thank you very much, and thank you very much to the organizers for inviting the publishing companies, the eldest cultural industry in Europe and all over the world. The commissioner is no longer here, but still, I'd like to say something which, to the best of my knowledge, applies to just every cultural sector. Every author, every investor, such as a publishing company, only wants for one thing. That is to say, to get the highest number of viewers, to get the highest number of readers, to get as many people as possible to go to the movies or reading their books. And saying that systematically we should come up with legislative mechanisms in order to impose access. I don't want to elaborate on exceptions, but the exceptions which you are in the process of discussing here at the European Parliament may be something good, but it could be dangerous insofar as it can compete directly with the sector of books and the selling of books. You were talking to me about the fixed price policy. This all started in Germany and in France it happens in 1980 under the impetus of Jack Lang. It was the very first piece of law passed under the presidency of François Mitterrand. This was unanimously adopted by the Sénat and the Assemblée Nationale. According to this law, booksellers are under the obligation of selling books at a maximum discount. In France, it's 5%. In Italy, it's 15%, because it's Italy and because they require more flexibility. In Germany, there is no discount. Books are sold at exactly the same price everywhere. You were talking about the majority, but unfortunately, this is not the case. There are countries in which there is no price setting mechanism, but there are a number of countries in which this is not so much of a problem, insofar as there is no fierce competition, at least on discounts. The only country where there is a fierce competition is the UK. And I'll give you a figure. There are less bookshops in London than in Paris. Every time I say this, it sends shivers down my spine. You know, people realize that they have to pay for the bricks, and they have to pay for the wages of their staff. And you have got big actors which also want to be paid. In the world of books, we used to have the fixed price. This mainly applied to Southern Europe and I know that in Belgium this was a fantasy, and it seems that the fixed price is going to be finally rolled out in Belgium, even though they were going to have a fixed price in the French-speaking part of Belgium and another fixed price in the Flemish-speaking part of Belgium. But this is Belgium. And I must say that things are developing at a very slow pace. But it so happens that publishers consider the digital book as being a possible future. It will be up to the readers, not the consumers, it will be up to the readers to decide on how they want to read in the future. We've been confronted with actors, no longer the hypermarkets or the supermarkets, but the very first company that decided to invest in books, and by the way, they consider books to be a product, and the very first to sell this as a product is Amazon. We have the best metadata. We have had the ISDN for the past 50 years, but it was easier for them to sell books compared to other cultural products. And Amazon, I'm saying Amazon, you know, because they are top of mind and they are really the one predominating the market. 95% of the digital books on the UK market is Amazon. Yes, 95% is held by Amazon. The publishers started asking themselves a few questions, given that you had a bookseller selling books at £1, €1 or $1. What is it that they could do? They opted for a system that already existed, and that is the agent's contract. Amazon is no longer a bookseller. Amazon is an intermediary. We are the one responsible for the price. They are responsible for selling. It's not possible for Amazon to decide on their price policy. They have to apply the price that is imposed. A couple of years ago, well, this is a global system, but Hachette in the U.S. a couple of years ago refused the Amazon's discount conditions. And for 2 months, Amazon removed the immediate purchase button below the Hachette books, meaning to say that if you really wanted to buy an Hachette book, you had to press the button at least 3 times and enter your credit card details, meaning that there were less people buying books from Hachette. It was not possible either to pre-order paper copies. You could pre-order paper copies from just every publishing company, with the exception of Hachette. but Hachette, which is a global player, stood its ground, and Arnaud Nourry, the CEO of Hachette Livre, was lucky enough to get the support of his authors, who earned way less money insofar as there were less books being sold over these couple of months. But they stuck to their guns. They really, they stood their ground. We do not have the same claims and demands as the one who spoke before me, because, you know, our revenue mainly comes from sales. And whether we're talking about physical books or digital books, we sell them. We sell these books to readers. We do not sell them so much to institutions. We have 96% of books, which, as a rule of thumb, are sold to booksellers, to supermarkets, or to players like Amazon. So it's important for us to keep this sales component, because, you know, reading a book is slightly different from listening to music or watching an audiovisual piece. We contemplated streaming. This is something that we are exploring, but this is not working yet. But what I know is that the European Parliament has been working for the past couple of months on three exceptions which have been put forward by the European Commission. By and large, we think that this is the way to go. But beware, these exceptions should not be enlarged and expanded, because it would be detrimental to the ecosystem of books. You know, we've seen the disappearance of record shops. You know, we are very lucky, because we have a network of booksellers in Europe. This is still very fragile, but it has the merit of existing, and we should make sure that we do not suffer from unfair competition. I know that this is not the idea behind the exception, that we know that these exceptions are meant to remedy market problems. So I hope that I managed to give you an answer to your question.
Thank you for bringing those reflections from the book sector. I think it's really important today that we are from all different parts of the cultural landscape, the creative industries. And today we have an opportunity to hear from the different perspectives and why different kinds of public policy are required at different levels to ensure we really do continue to have diversity of expression. I forgot to say earlier that we did invite someone from the Association of Music Platforms, but sadly they weren't able to join us. I didn't want people to think we hadn't invited people from the platforms also. But that brings me on to Helen Smith, Executive Chair of Impala. The music sector, as I understand it, Helen, talking with you earlier, wants a better transfer of value from platforms to labels and musicians. So my question is, you're the independent sector. How do you see the future for independent labels that put their records on user uploading platforms? How are musicians and labels going to effectively monetize music, when I've heard there's been some recent change that's made that less possible? Perhaps you can tell us about.
Yeah, sure. Well, Impala represents what's known in the sector. Oh yes, Impala represents what's known in the sector as independent music companies. That basically means small and medium-sized and micro operators. And our job is to partner artists. So we do the promotion, we do the negotiations, we help out with making an album. It's a job that really today is one that just moves constantly. So, for example, our organisation has always been, and our members have always been, very pro-digital. So we did a deal with Napster when Napster was the world's second biggest brand. Some people in this room might not remember Napster, but not so long ago it was the world's not so long ago it was the world's second biggest brand. It's interesting to remember that. And today we have a really great functioning licensing body called Merlin, and it makes all of the independent music available in a one-stop shop for the world for all digital purposes. And that's really important because that basket of repertoire represents 80% of all music released in Europe today. So it is a huge basket of repertoire. And what our members are noticing also is that they are solicited more today than ever before by artists who are looking for professional services so that they can concentrate on the creative side. And that's obviously particularly important when you want to go outside your country as well. So today, in the context of this particular panel and remuneration, I think we've heard a lot about the value gap. That's obviously something that's really, really important to our members. It's very, very important to Merlin. Our members have really well-functioning channels on YouTube, great daily relationships. They do see this value gap, in quite a stark and obvious way. So the move from the Commission and the move through the legislative process to fix that value gap through Article 13 of the Copyright Directive is something that we welcome. And also, simply from the question of the functioning of the digital market, it's very important that that's friction-free. At the moment, it's full of friction and inefficiencies. So clarity in that respect is positive for the single market. We also support the transparency and contract adjustment provisions. That's an area where Impala and the independent sector have already done a lot of work. 3 years ago, on an international level, we adopted something called the WIN Declaration, where the sector took on engagements beyond their contractual obligations to share certain types of revenue which were not covered by the contracts, and also include certain provisions on transparency. There are certain elements in those provisions in the draft directive that we think do need to be modified so that they're proportionate and reasonable for our members, bearing in mind that they're small actors. In terms of the new right that we heard about, that's a right that we have discussed for a long, long time in our organisation at different levels, different countries, and we have come to the conclusion that it's not something that we can support as an organisation. We think it goes beyond what is reasonable in the sector, and we're concerned about the impact on.
We could come back to that. We were never to agree.
Yeah. So that is something which we feel, adding a new right to the complexity in today's digital market is not something that our organisations feel is appropriate. And when they do that, they look at the fact that they have to weigh up their accounts. They know that if you're a digital service and you have to start negotiating and paying out again, that will surely come out of someone else's share, which would be our member's share, and they feel that would have a drastic impact on their ability to continue to invest and to maintain the risk, which means that they're able to sign up 80% of all new artists today and give those artists an opportunity. So it's really about that balance between investment and risk. So that's why they believe that is something which is just a step too far for them. In terms of the three Ps, I think our members would add two Ps. I think they would add power and parity. And if the power of platforms and the ability to rewrite the rules of engagement is something which is very important, and it's great to hear Mrs. Trupel talking about that in such a passionate way, because this is something that we have discussed also in our action plan for digital, which is about promoting the digital single market through culture. We talk about rewriting the rules of engagement online. And we, as a sector which cooperated very early on with the digital market, we totally embraced the user-generated economy. We are engaging with enormous players, and we can see that sometimes the trading practices go beyond what is reasonable. Obviously, the role of competition rules is very, very important, but we do feel that maybe the today's principles of competition may need to be revised so that they are fit for the digital age. When we look at the question of competition, is the notion, traditional notion of dominance, is it appropriate today when we see there are multiple indispensable partners, which means it's difficult to establish dominance? The other area which I think we're particularly interested in is the question of unfair trading practices online, which the Commission is going to address. It's going to introduce a regulation on that. We think it's very important that unfair trading practices has a fairly broad definition, that it includes things like terminating contracts, like terminating access to tools which are essential, content identification is essential, monetization tools are essential. If your access to those is restricted or terminated because you're a smaller player, then that has massive implications, particularly when there are no alternatives in the marketplace. And we had an example last week with the main user Look platform deciding to terminate some of our members on the basis that they were too small. And this is something which is quite surprising, because we hear that the platforms have a role, they're fundamental, they're open, they're level, and yet in our members' lives that they see a slightly different story. So that is something which I think is vital, that is stressed in the upcoming regulation on platforms. And I think lastly, that I would just add that the question of parity is also about discrimination, and here we look at competition when we also look at trading practices. So I think it's going to be interesting to see what comes out of the Commission on that. And when we think about how we tie all this together, because there are different themes, what's important, I think, for Europe is to take a step back and why are we doing all this? Why is copyright important? Why is culture important? It's also about diversity, but it's also because of the cultural and social and economic importance of culture. Europe has a totally unique situation which involves multiple languages, multiple cultures. This is something which we have a responsibility, but also a potential to maximise. And I think what's interesting for Europe right now is to look at the concept of an industrial policy for culture, which ties in, how do we grow the SMEs in the sector? The media programme is fantastic. Can we have more in the loan guarantee scheme, please, for example? Because one of the issues in the cultural sector is that it is the SMEs who are doing a lot of the investment and risk-taking. Mm. So how do we grow those companies? How do we make Europe the best place for culture, the best place to run a creative business? And that, I think, is the bigger picture, which is really important to come back to. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Helen. I'm interested in that final idea, which I've heard many say about the need for a joined-up, holistic approach, and you've called it an industrial policy for culture, and it's maybe something that Mr. Abamonte can respond to, because I think many of us gathered here today have watched as various proposals have come forward in a kind of ad hoc way, as opposed to them being within a cadre of something more overarching, which is what I think you are referring to, and certainly the importance of SMEs within that. Well, Mr. Abamonte, you have heard a lot of ideas. You have an unfair. I would ask if you could just give some reactions to what you've heard, but also I know that you will have ideas of things you wanted to talk about, and the Commission's view on copyright and where it's at and where maybe you see it going and what may be any outcomes you can predict.
Good afternoon, everybody. I will try and go through the main points which have been made. So, first of all, the objectives of the reform. One of the objectives, the reform is about fairness and is about money. And it's good that it's about money, so it's about the value, basically, generated by protected content. It's the value generated by creation. And it's about a fairer, a much more equitable sharing of the value. So money is very important in this context, because we're talking about cultures, we are talking about cultural diversity, we are also talking about fundamental rights, as I will try to illustrate when I will speak about the press publisher's rights, which Ms. Trooper referred to before. So in pursuing the objective of creating a fairer marketplace for copyright in general, and for all the different players, so the creators, the exploiters, and the platforms, of course, we are doing three things. So the first thing is that we are introducing a neighboring right for press publishers. So press publishers are not doing very well in the physical world, so they're losing a lot of revenues because, print publications are a little, the consumption of print publication is a little bit, is decreasing, is going down the drain. So news are the more and more consumed online. The increase in revenues online for the press for press publishers is not sufficient to compensate the decrease in revenues in the physical world. Since press publishers, they share, in order to make advertisement revenues, their publications freely online. I mean, this has in turn give rise to new business models, the news aggregators. Mm-hmm. And the news aggregators also make money out of the advertising revenues, but there is a little bit of reluctance on their part to share the values with the press publishers. So we have given them a new neighboring right, which will do two things. The new neighboring right should enable the press publishers to negotiate better monetization agreement with the platforms. It should enable them also to better enforce their rights if their press publications are, for example, uploaded or they circulate without their consent, so if they circulate illegally. That is very important, not just for the press publishers, but it is important for the whole value chain. So it is important for the journalists, it is important for the cartoonists, it is important for the photographers, and ultimately it's very important for democracies, in particular if one considers this hideous phenomenon of fake news. So it is very, very important to guarantee the existence of free and trustworthy journalism in this world. The second thing is the value gap. When we've spoken a lot about the value gap. Well, with the value gap, we start what my former commissioner, Ms. Redding, called the virtuous circle, which could be also an expression of an industrial policy for culture. So what we are doing is that we are trying to rebalancing out the market in a way which is a bit more fairer for the right holders. So once time and again, we have this platform, the video sharing platforms, which have become the first port of call for consumption and distribution of protected content. And once again, who makes the money? Well, it's the platforms who make the money out of the content, which is very often created in Europe. And there's a reluctance on the part of the platforms to conclude fairer monetization agreements with the right holders. Why? Because the right holders do not know, so there is a lack of transparency on how the content, how much content circulates, how the content is consumed. So basically we have established a cooperation mechanism whereby the right holders will provide the data, so the fingerprinting to the platforms. The platforms will put in place some effective and proportionate content identification measures, and they will get back to the right holders. And in doing so, by increasing transparency, hopefully the right holders will enter into more effective monetization agreements with the platforms and will also be able to take down and remove content which has been uploaded without their consent. The other part of the virtuous circle is the rules on greater fairness and remuneration of creators, which implicitly, well, you may say that it is not enough, but implicitly are an expression of an equitable remuneration right. So what we are doing is that we are trying to increase transparency to the benefit of the creators, so the authors and the performers, vis-à-vis their contractual party, the first contractual parties, so the producers, which may very well be VOD platforms, I don't know, or a streaming, or a music streaming platform. So transparency as to the mode of exploitation and the revenues generated by the works. The possibility to adjust the contract, in particular if there is a disproportion between the remuneration originally negotiated and the commercial success of the work, and something which is very important, an ADR, a voluntary out-of-court dispute resolution mechanism. And
voluntary?
Voluntary. Well, why? The parties may...
Many would say, why voluntary?
Well, because it's very difficult to mandate an ADR. It's very difficult in practice. Normally, ADR is something... So normally, the parties have the right to go to court, but they may choose to settle the matter à l'amiable before a body, before a champ de commerce, for example. So it will be a little bit intrusive, but again, this is a matter which will be discussed, to require an ADR, so to make an ADR compulsory. But having said that, there is Nicole Schulz who said that the provisions are weak and they will add very little. But it is, with a great respect, not accurate. There was this study carried out by these legal professors for the jury committee, which showed that as a result of the provisions, for example, in Germany, that there is no ADR, the Germans will have to introduce an ADR. So things for the performers and the creators, at least in Germany, for ADR, will go much better. But for the remuneration in many, many other member states, for example, there will be sector-specific provisions, so a new remedy, which can be used by the authors and the creators if there is a disproportion in the commercial success. So what is called the bestseller clause. I finish with the unwaivable remuneration right. So I know the argument. What is the problem with the unwaivable remuneration right? Is that this idea will add a complex layer and very costly layer of licensing costs for the platforms, which may be European small platforms. Yes, because the platforms will have to get a contract from the producers, and they will have also to get licenses from the collective management organizations in all member states, so in 28 member states. And in certain member states, there can be more than one collective management organization. So this will add to the burden of the platforms, so it will add to the burden of relatively small platforms such as Spotify or Deezer, which are European platforms. But on top of that, there is no guarantee that the authors will be better paid, because the cake, so the value, will remain the same. So basically, these people will have to pay less the producer in order to pay the collective management organization, and so eventually this may be a zero-sum game for the authors, will get paid the same amount of money. Now, having said that, if I can finish with a personal touch, because people say normally that I'm a bit unemotional when I speak about it. I am very, very attached to the copyright reform, and in particular to this part of the reform, so the better deal for the authors, the performers, and the right holders. So I will do my very utmost to defend it to the death, if I can. And of course, if can be improved, if the reform can be improved, and some of the weapons of the reforms may be sharpened up, I'm more than happy to listen to it. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Abamonte. Very, very interesting. I see great attentiveness in the room to what you said. I would love to open it up to the room, but time is pressing. I don't want to take away from Pascal's next workshop, but I would like to just offer the platform, if I may, an opportunity just to come back and make one point or ask one question of Mr. Abamonte, if they wish. Nicole, first.
Yes. Thank you. Yes, because, of course, the unwaivable right was mentioned a couple of times. It would be nice to get back to those comments. For Helen, of course, performers love producers. We have a good relationship. You mean work. So there's no question about, continue that we want to continue or that we would like to put to cause problems. That's why we have that proposal of an unwaivable right to remuneration. So the EU legislator has given us an exclusive right, which is the most valuable right, and it doesn't work for us. So we try to fix it. So we're not trying to create a new right. We would just like to improve what we've already been given, for one. Then we could have chosen different options of enforcing this. So we could have asked for compulsory licensing, but we are not, because we would like you to continue operating the way that you've done, because you're doing it well, but we would like to make sure that performers are receiving a share, a fair share. And I think anything considering the market that it is today and making it without the performers receiving a share of that, I think that consideration is beyond reasonable. And I don't think it will have a drastic impact, because it is equitable remuneration. And the last I checked, I'm slightly exaggerating now, but the French Authors Society collected double the amount of 36 of our member organizations in the same year. So I don't think we're going to kill the industry with our proposal. You've survived so many other things. You would survive this, I'm pretty sure.
Okay.
One last sentence to Mr. Abamonte. It's the same argument. It's equitable sharing that you are, of course, promoting, which we're very happy about, but it has to be equitable. And I don't think, and I will just mention the contract adjustment, I don't think, also looking at Germany, ADR, I'm sure the German performers will be super excited that they've got ADR now. And also I don't think that looking also at a German example, that going through the courts for 10 years with the end result of not being able to get future engagements means that it's equitable, that it is equitable sharing and a good solution. So it is a toolbox which can be used in certain cases, but it does not mean fair remuneration for performers.
Jean-Paul.
Oui, je voulais juste dire qu'en
Yes, I just wanted to say that in France there are rights that are enforced, copyrights that are enforced for the films that are broadcast on Netflix. Perhaps these rights are too weak, but it's a beginning and it has not prevented Netflix to develop their activities in France in a significant manner. So, coming back to my own case, perhaps I'm speaking too much of myself, but when I receive rights for my broadcast in Poland, Spain, you name it, it's automatic, it's very simple, and I don't have the feeling that I'm endangering the life of broadcasters nor the life of Netflix that is not complaining. So instead of going to courts, it would be easier in Europe at least to develop copyright, to apply it to broadcasters and producers, broadcasters would apply it. I know no one would be happy about it, because once there's something to pay, people are not happy, but it's part of our survival. Americans do not have that, but they're paid much more when they work than we are. So we could talk about this, as well, but if we have to adjust to American wages, we would need to multiply threefold, fourthfold European salaries. Of course, the system should be improved, but there is no reason why it shouldn't be applied as it is today.
We are facing a market failure in the digital economy with the big monopolies, and we have an unfair situation for all of the authors. And I want to solve both. Therefore, I would argue again towards Mr. Abamonti from the Commission that I see on the content level and on a strategic level advantages when we go for this obligation to license, because I think it's much easier to argue publicly what it means than ancillary copyright. Therefore, I think because it's appropriate for press use, commercial use of press articles, and for copyright-protected uploading of country content, therefore, I prefer that. Of course, we have to make it in a juridical way, in a good manner, but I think politically it's a much better message. And on this unwaivable right, I think Nicole is right. What we had so far is not sufficient for the authors. They are at the start of the whole value chain, and we have to protect them because they are the weakest part in the whole cultural value chain. And therefore, I think there are only good reasons to go for that unviable right. It will not mean, for example, because I know the lobbying of Spotify, that they have to pay two times. No, they have not. There is only the need that they respect the right of the authors to be paid. And for that, I want to find a solution, and therefore I'm not convinced that the arguments of the Commission are right. I think my ones are better. Thank you.
Eleanor Anne. Yeah.
Pour les éditeurs. Now, as for the publishers that I represent, what I wish for people who are going to vote in the next weeks or months, those people who are going to vote on the checks, please do think of the ecosystem that you could endanger. I don't have an opinion as such on Article 11 or on the value gap. Of course, I do. I am in favor of sharing value, but there are people who are better at speaking of the subject than I am. Now, in the directive, there are 7 articles dealing with exceptions or exhausted work. This is a subject that we haven't tackled. Now, let me give you one number. In schools in France, 80% of copied material are school books. Now, which makes the publication of school books impossible for SMEs, which means that in the future there will remain only a few actors on the market, which will endanger and jeopardize cultural diversity. So, I think that the Commission had come up with a text that was suitable for us. Let's now hope that the Parliament and the Council go in the same direction and take decisions that do not jeopardize the ecosystems.
Textbooks also, who have very little to depend on in many cases. Helen, just very tightly,
yeah,
if
sure,
you would.
Sure. I think on the question of the new right, obviously the issue of remuneration is really important. I agree with Nicole, it's not the same as...
So the question of remuneration is very important. I agree with Nicole that the question of dispute resolution and remuneration are separate. But I think certainly in the music sector, the question of a new right is something which would upset the balance. And certainly I'm just responding. And there is a system in place. I think it would have an effect on the platforms. And certainly in terms of our numbers, you know, we have a contract adjustment clause. If our contracts are revised, if we have a new right, then it will change the economics of certainly the independent music sector and wider music sector, and I think some of our featured artists would be concerned if they felt that they would receive less at the end of the day. And I think the final word I would like to contribute anyway is on the question of the value gap, because there is some debate around whether or not if we fix the value gap, then we also need an exception on user-generated content. And I would just like to underline that certainly in our world, the where we have embraced user-generated content to the extent that 80% of revenues from YouTube, for example, today are from user-generated content. And I think an exception for that content is really a giant step backward.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thanks.
I'm sorry I have to close very quickly. I don't want to go further on to the time of the next workshop, but I'd like to say thank you to all of you for bringing such passion and such detail on behalf of all those you represent, and also for debating amongst each other. We were never going to agree, but that's part of the democratic debate we are involved in. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks.
Il y a un marteau ici, c'est incroyable. C'est où? Je suis où? Quoi? Juliane est là? Elle n'est pas à ma droite? DG Connect, c'est qui là déjà? Il n'y a pas de DG Connect là. Il n'y a pas de DG Connect. C'est qui?
Oui, oui.
Bon. Moi, je suis là.
Voilà.
Bon, ben là, il y a un micro. On éteint où le micro, là? D'accord. Mais ça va. Oui, on m'a dit. C'est pour ça que vous partirez en premier. Vous parlerez en premier. Parce qu'on me l'a dit. On me l'a dit.
Mais je m'excuse tout d'abord. Il faut que je parte parce que j'avais quelque chose d'autre.
Voilà.
Bonjour.
Ça va?
Comment allez-vous?
Bon.
Bonjour.
Bonjour.
Vous allez bien?
Très bien.
Voilà.
J'estime.
Ouf. Bon, on va continuer les débats. D'abord, c'est toujours un plaisir pour moi d'être avec Viviane, hein, Viviane Reding, parce que elle a tellement fait pour la culture.
Well, first of all, I'd like to thank Viviane Reding for what she's been doing for content creation here in Europe with directives that have been adjusted and reviewed. We can always rely upon Viviane. We'll be talking about this sooner or later, Viviane. I was very happy to hear the contribution of the commissioner to digital economy. Very often they do not speak about culture, those digital experts. We have the feeling that there are barriers between culture and digital economy. And we've heard a cultural speech on the contribution of digital content to works creation and to culture. I was, however, disappointed by the contribution of the Commission's representative. I did not hear the same speech in the Commissioner's side and in the representative of the Commission's side. Now, I know there are many attempts to put an end to fake news, but saying that proportional compensation of author makes the life of platforms difficult, this is something which is unreal. I am the heir of Beaumarchais. This company was created back in 1767, and his fight was in favor of fair compensation of authors. He won the fight during the French Revolution, and he got the vote on a law that led to proportional compensation of authors. At present, in France, we have proportional compensation with all the platforms. But as Jean-Paul Salomé has said, Netflix continues to flourish in France. YouTube is developing their activities in France as well, and Apple is also making video on demand. All the authors, when their work is broadcast, receive proportional compensation. It is also the case for musicians throughout the world. Jean-Paul is quite unlucky because he's not paid in some countries, but the musicians of his movies are paid. So perhaps he should be responsible both for filmmaking and music of his film, and so he would be better paid. As far as France is concerned, all the main internet platforms have signed agreements and abide with copyrights rules. However, the main audiovisual group in France, the main French audiovisual group that has made lobbying in the Commission so as to fight piracy, I'm referring here to Vivendi and to Canal Plus, has stopped paying copyright to decrease the amounts of copyrights. And finally, we went to court in the suburbs of Paris. So internet platforms are being criticized. Of course, they are not always virtuous. But as far as copyrights are concerned, and as far as authors of the French cinema, well, contracts have been complied with. Something that the main French group in the broadcasting sector is not doing. Now, let's come to the core of the subject, namely, how can we make sure that European creative works are made more visible in Europe? I'm surrounded by experts in the field, Sidia El Ramli, who will take the floor to kick off the debate, because she will have to leave right after. Next to her, Christophe Tardieu, who's executive vice president of of the French Film Center, the FFC. The commissioner is willing to create a directory of works. It has been done by the CNC in France, and now we know what is not available. Once you know what is available, you also know what is not available. And we have been able to have voted in France a law on the follow-up of broadcasting of works. It has been voted unanimously by the French Parliament in the framework of the law on the freedom of creativity content. We also have a representative of the Commission who will speak about the budget. Christine Eloy is also with us, as well as Nicolas Frank, head of European Affairs at EBU, that is also active in the field of words dissemination. Mrs. El Ramli, you represent the platforms. I'm not sure you have fought for the proposals that are on the table, the compulsory quota of 30% of audiovisual works. I was asked, am I happy? I said I would have preferred 50%. 30% is still better than 20, and 40 would be better than 30. Secondly, I'm not sure you're satisfied of another item of the directive on SOD, requirements would apply to recipient countries. Now, as far as taxation issues are concerned, Facebook has announced to the relief of small taxpayers that they would pay their taxes on the basis of their revenue, of the revenues they make in France. Great, great. So they avoid paying less taxes. Now, could you please tell us what you think of these measures? Well, thank you.
On some of the things that were said at the last panel, but I've been invited to speak on this topic on how to make European creative works more visible in the EU. And frankly, the AVMS and where that might end is not to me the answer. I think what we need to look at is the reality of the situation today, which is that there's been a paradigm shift, that as it is today, we see that the consumption of European content is probably at its best for a very long time. Online, we've got major and small European productions getting a lot more attention than ever before, be that in the publishing, print publishing side, be it in the audiovisual side or in music, in the music sector, and I can give you some figures later on. But I think if we're going to look ahead at what is a pragmatic approach to actually create visibility for European content, it's to reach the audience, and that's where the paradigm shift has changed. And that's where I thought it was enlightening to hear Mr. Avamonte say the copyright proposal is about money, and the distribution of money, and reinforcing, actually, basically it comes down to reinforcing the status quo. And I think that that's exactly the wrong way to go about it. Thinking of reinforcing the distribution channels that have been in place for a very long time in an environment that's completely different will not work. What we're seeing today is online, you've got people gathering together on the basis of common interests, on the basis of common passions, and that is exactly what will be the best way to allow the creative sectors to cater for their audiences who will lap up the content. That also means a recognition for what kind of content we're actually talking about. There are, so online is more tailored, it's more targeted, and it is appeal-based consumption. That means that you'll have for generic mass appeal productions, if I may, you will have larger audiences, but that doesn't mean that for niche productions you won't have an audience. You will, but you have to find that audience. So you'll have to get more creative as to how to reach them. And that's why I'm saying I'm not necessarily going to go into the weeds of the AVMS directive. Frankly, we've gone through the whole process here in this House, in the Council. We're now in the trilogue discussions. I'd like to think of a more proactive way as to how to reach the audiences correctly. And to do that, I think that the creator groups, the creators themselves, will have to tap into those communities, those audiences that are actually craving to consume the content that's being created. It might mean adaptation of some of the content to become more appealing, but overall, the audience is there. The audience has been taking up a lot of this content. So if I think of just a few examples, because Netflix has been discussed, not a current member of ADEMA, but if you think of three big productions that are being consumed heavily on Netflix at the moment, is Cable Girls in Spanish, Dark in German, La Monte in French. Those are European productions, not all Netflix productions, but European productions that there's an audience. They would never have had that level of appeal had it just been going through the normal distribution channels of release windows in one geography at a time. Between 2003 and 2013, we saw that digital accounted for €34 billion of revenue increase in the EU's creative sectors. These are big numbers. This is not something to be battered away. A subscriber to Spotify, Deezer, or Apple Music generated 2.4 times more on average than somebody who was consuming a purchaser of physical or digital music. So what I'm saying is to be able to have creative works visible, the first thing would be to reach out to the audiences more directly, to embrace the opportunities that the paradigm shift has actually created, as opposed to just trying to entrench even more obligation in legislation.
Merci, mais vous pensez quand même pas que si vous avez...
Don't you think that if you had more European works on some platforms, you would have more subscribers on these platforms?
Plus des abonnés des...
More subscribers, more subscriptions. Well, we have many subscribers on these platforms, but you could have even more. I'm trying to, you know, urge you to increase your numbers. Well, we agree, we are okay with having more subscribers. So more subscribers, but not too many constraints. I think that subscription and constraints can go hand in hand. In France, and Christophe Tarnier will mention it, there are virtuous constraints that can satisfy everyone. And in France, we are experts in virtuous constraints. Lucia Ricaldi, your head of the media program, one of the strong assets of this program is works dissemination. All the studies that have been made on audiovisual in Europe have pointed at one weakness in Europe. We do produce a lot of works in Europe. Yes, this is true, but unfortunately, these works are not sufficiently disseminated or broadcast. They are, on the one hand, the national works, and on the other hand, the American works and the media program with Europa Cinema or the broadcasting program have tried to encourage the dissemination of European works. What are the outcomes of such programs? Are there any new ideas emerging so as to encourage better dissemination or broadcasting? Don't you think that the weak point of Europe is to be good at maintaining the diversity of creation, but to be very weak when it comes to platforms, because the main platforms are American and not European?
Donc, beaucoup de questions.
So many questions. But first of all, let me say that the media program, which is a popular program, is a program that has had a lot of added value in terms of circulation of works. You hinted at Europa Cinema, which is a network that brings together more than 2,500 screens in more than 700 European cities, and not only large cities, but also medium-sized cities, that makes it possible to bring culture closer to as many citizens as possible. 65% approximately of revenue, such as Tony Hartman, have been made thanks to the Europa Cinema Network. It has a lot of value. It has a lot of monetary value, and this is something that should be taken into consideration. We support different distribution initiatives. Nearly one-third of the films that are produced are supported in one way or another in terms of their European distribution. So I think that these figures speak for themselves. 4 million European citizens can have access to European non-national films. I would like also to talk about online promotion, because media adapted progressively, wanted to adapt itself to the changes taking place in the industry. And we tried to promote as much as possible these films. We contributed to the constitution of directories. And then there is also education to cinema. Because this is something not to be overlooked. Does it mean that nothing could be and should be changed and that everything is perfect? Certainly not. We should give due consideration to what has been achieved, but we should make sure that we make improvements to it. We think that you have 14 actions, 14 mechanisms, and the problem is that we do not have sufficient budget in order to have the expected impact. We would like the programme to be much more focused on audience, and we want to support the access and the circulation of works, but we want those works to be more known and to be more attractive and to reach out to the audience. And we think that we should also support the value chain. We at media supported the producers, the distributors, but now we should promote a more sustained collaboration between the different actors, the different players in the value chain. So we think that there could be four focus areas, one being the support to creation, the second one being access to works, third the promotion of works, and finally talents and cooperation. A few words about promotion, because we consider this is an essential aspect that has been neglected so far. We supported the circulation of works, but this is not enough. This is not enough for these works to be better known. We might make a better use of the digital tools, as was said by the Commissioner, so that through ambitious strategies relying on the use of social media, we can really find an audience for these works. Media has always supported cultural diversity. There could be other types of diversities, such as gender diversity. We think that this might be appropriate. So we might consider how we can support the different types of diversity. I'd like to talk about a concrete initiative that has been mentioned by the Commissioner, which is the idea of a repository of works. We're going to do some serious thinking about it together with the players. We will take as a basis the already existing referencing tools. We will make the most of what has already been put in place, like in Strasbourg. It's by putting all of the initiatives around the table that we can have a multiplying effect. The Commissioner talked about the budget. I won't elaborate any further on it, but we should certainly have means and more means that are of the same level as our ambition. So there is ongoing consultation. The consultation on budget is done by clusters. There is one that is about mobility and right to citizenship, and we think this is relevant for cultural activities and for cultural industries. And I really urge you to take an active part and to demonstrate the extent to which the programme has helped bringing some added value to your particular sector. Thank you.
Les plateformes internet.
And what about the internet platforms? Can we expect a special program, or will it be part and parcel of the general program? We started a dialogue. We want to promote enhanced cooperation. We started a dialogue with the distributors, with the VOD platforms, with the selling agent, in order to explore the possibility of using new modes of collaboration among the different European partners so as to reach a critical mass and so as to improve the collaboration. This is still work in progress, but we wish to capitalize on what exists and make sure that we bring around the table all of the different players. Thank you. I'd like now to turn to the EBU representative. There has been a lot of discussion on the territoriality of rights. The Commissioner wanted advent of a digital single market and considered that territoriality could be a hindrance to a digital single market. And the professionals say that due consideration should be paid to the markets in Europe because there is some chronology involved in the exploitation. And therefore, one needs to be careful. Some American platforms do, they can buy the rights for Europe. What about EBU? You, as EBU, you defended a slightly contradictory ID. That is to say that it is the law of the broadcasting country that would apply. And it seems that this would apply to catch-up TV. I think that the audience is more than happy to be given the possibility of catching up on TV programs that they didn't have time to watch. But it does raise a problem of rights. It seems that there is a conflict between you and the producers. Could you please explain your position, and could you please tell us about the position taken by EBU on these platform problems? I know that EBU always wanted to promote the programs of TV channels. Don't you think there is a lack of European platforms? There are not enough platforms to allow for the proper dissemination of works, because if we take into consideration everything that is being done in BBC, in France, in Spain, in Italy, and in the Nordic countries, I know that there is a lot going on in TV and in film making. I must say that this is a program that is even more appealing than the one of Netflix. Thank you very much for this invitation. I think that you certainly raised a number of very sensitive issues. But I would like to take a bird's eye view and talk about copyright and talk about the idea of creating a European platform. And if you don't mind, I'd like to address other issues. And you certainly have the right not to answer my questions. And I will now switch over to English.
Remind everybody that public service media organizations are actually quite key actors in the creative and cultural sector, because they invest a lot, among other things they do, but they invest a lot in original content, and which amounts to 18 billion euros per year in the EU. And if you compare this, for example, with Netflix and Amazon, combined globally, they invest, I think, 9.5 billion. So it's still, you know, it's still an important factor in the European audiovisual economy. And what is interesting also is that 84% of this investment really is invested in original content, and that is really a great amount. And all this content is available in addition, of course, with all the different genres, be it news and current affairs, drama, children programs, for an average of 3.81 euros per month to the citizens. This is either license fee or budget from the state budget. That is also an interesting fact. Now, from all they produce, a lot of this content is, of course, national content and regional content, and this is something which, of course, the audiences like to see, and this is why public broadcasters can produce this and make it available. But when you look at what they show on their screens, according to the European Audiovisual Observatory, it's interesting to see also that 44% of the film they broadcast actually European films. So there is a great variety already available on public service media channels. And you all know that, I mean, they are very active in also co-investing in co-productions of cinema films in general. And there are many examples of awards which have been given to very successful co-productions. A recent example is The Square, which was awarded the Palme d'Or. Now I'd like to briefly come back to the changing environment, audiovisual and media environment. And Siada has talked about a paradigm shift, and I think it is really a paradigm shift in many respects. And public service media, but all the other stakeholders can feel it, and they benefit from it, but they also in an increasingly competitive situation. As we all know, the environment is increasingly converged and globalized, and next to this we have a European media and audiovisual market which is fragmented due to a lot of different smaller and bigger countries, due to a multitude of languages and many other aspects. And often European actors are actually very small, so to compete with these big operators is not easy. But, I mean, this fragmented environment leads also to a situation where we have a great diversity. You have a lot of different actors with a lot of different creative and talent and diverse producing diverse content. What is very clear, of course, is for all these actors that they have to be online, they have to be active online, they have to have a strong presence, and so also have to have public service media organizations. If they're not online, very active, offer their services, they're not relevant anymore, and they will soon be dead. And they have developed a lot of different services, linear, non-linear, and the famous catch-up services, which you mentioned, which are very popular. According to our research, actually, it shows that these free catch-up services, such as BBC iPlayer, which is very well known, or Rai Replay, remain the preferred way to access on-demand content. And actually, almost all of our members offer these catch-up services these days. But they don't only offer their own services on their own platforms, but they also cooperate with platforms, and you can also access their content via the platforms. And this creates, of course, a particular situation with also a particular way or kind of competition. And then when you look at what the platforms develop, I mean, it's really getting quite tough for all the other, the traditional, let's say, the traditional audiovisual players. Netflix and Amazon Video, for instance, are strengthening their presence in European markets, not only through video-on-demand services, but also increasingly investing in content production. We heard this earlier. And this means that competition also appears for distribution rights, content rights, production, advertising revenues, and also for talent. So that changes really the situation. There are many other examples of that kind. Now I come to the regulatory issues, which we also have to look at. We all have been involved in and have looked closely at the different digital single market initiatives launched by the Commission. And these initiatives have addressed some of the factors created by this paradigm shift. But I would say they've just scratched on the surface, and they haven't really gone into the depth of the matter. And of course, it's also not very easy because developments are very, very fast. So regulation always is behind actually market developments. Copyright was mentioned, indeed, and very important when you talk about circulation of European works of content across borders. Copyright is a very important element, and indeed we have supported the European Commission proposal on the so-called broadcasting regulation, which advocated a system where the broadcasters own online services, so these catch-up services, which are very popular, their own programs, could fall under a country of origin principle, which in our view does not mean that the principle of territoriality is completely gone, absolutely not, because you will always have to negotiate, of course, the price for this. I mean, you will always have to deal with the right holders and decide together how you come to an agreement. Now, we understand that the Parliament and many other stakeholders, you said it earlier, are not supporting this, and this is regrettable. But there we are. We'll see what gets out of this discussion. Another element which was mentioned earlier also is the Audiovisual Media Services Directive, and there is one element which is important for us. This is the question of appropriate prominence of general interest content. The European Parliament actually usefully introduced a provision which allows member states to adopt proportionate measures at national level in order to pursue these general interest objectives, and those would be media pluralism, cultural diversity, and freedom of expression. So very important. It's one element of the story. But what else needs to be done? It's very clear that collaboration of the different stakeholders is crucial, and with many of the stakeholders who have spoken today, public service media do cooperate on a regular basis, and that's very important. For example, in drama, high-end drama co-production, they also partner with commercial operators, commercial television operators, but also platforms. To address societal and political issues like fake news, we have now a huge debate around fake news, but also fight against hate speech online, news and media literacy. We are collaborating with platforms, and there are, for example, a number of fact-checking initiatives where we work with them together. And, of course, they collaborate with their fellow public broadcasters. There is, for example, an interesting cooperation initiative of the Nordic public broadcasters, which is called the Nordic 12. And the idea here is that five Nordic public service media organizations together produce 12 drama series and a series of 12 drama, which they will then broadcast across the five countries. So that is also very useful. In this context, it's important to mention, of course, the media program, and we all want that this media program continues to strive. And it does, for example, it has helped, for example, in the past with the creation of an European VOD platform, MUBI, for example, which is quite successful. It's difficult, of course, to compete with the big platforms, but it's very good that these platforms exist. But regulation, yes, we have, and the media policy, media program policy, very important. But there are also issues which have not been addressed so far. And this is more broader, the question of the role of platforms and their responsibilities. And we think this needs to be sufficiently addressed. We have identified a number of issues where this can be a problem. And this is, of course, different regulatory regimes, sometimes the lack of data, which is important, especially for public media and other broadcasters, the access to audience data, for example. Then there is also a lack of transparency on access and prominence of content and sometimes preferential treatment of the platform's own or the partner services. So when they not only offer the platform, but they have their own content services, how do they deal then with other providers? More generally, what we think has really to be looked at is the lack of transparency of business practices and algorithms for users and for content providers. Very important. Now, what we think is, regulation for this commission, there will not be many new proposals, we don't think so, but at least what the commission could support would be in this context a structured dialogue. They could facilitate the structured dialogue between media and audiovisual players and the platforms to address these different issues. That would certainly be helpful. And last but not least, I would like to mention the key role of media research and innovation. The Commissioner earlier mentioned her idea to support the development of digital narrative and to use big data for this also. And this is indeed very important. I mean, our members looking at new ways of producing content, distributing content, and make it available. And for this, innovation and research is necessary. And we have strongly advocated to introduce a media innovation scheme into the new European research agenda beyond 2020. So this is currently being discussed, and we think this would be very important. So to summarize, what we need to go on from here is increase collaboration between all the different stakeholders, address the role and responsibility of platforms, in particular improve transparency of their business practices and create a dialogue, as I said, and include a media innovation scheme in the new European research agenda beyond 2020, which should capitalize on Europe's creativity and diversity. Thank you.
Merci. Après l'Union européenne de radio.
Thank you very much. After the EBU, we're going now to move to the distribution of films in theatres. You know, theatres for European filmmaking are a main asset thanks to programs such as Europa Cinema. It is quite an opportunity to have so many theatres in Europe. What struck me is that internet brings down the value of works. The value of works is lower on the internet compared to theatres. And because of theatres, the value of film making was maintained. Look at the number of people going to the movies. This has certainly contributed to the situation that we know in the film industry. I'd like to give the floor to Christine Eloi. You've been involved in the distribution of films in Belgium. We know that the situation is far from being a bed of roses here in Belgium. You now represent the European Federation of Distributors. What is your point of view on territoriality, on the measures to be taken with a view to promoting the circulation of films throughout Europe? And I would have a very last question. Don't you fear that some platforms like Netflix may deprive the distributors of their right when they impede the distribution of films in theatres, like it was the case with this film which had been granted Caméra d'Or at the Cannes Film Festival, the film called Divine. I think that this film was released in France, but in France only.
I have to decide which language I would use. Maybe English is better, no? So that everyone can follow? Well, so I'll do a mix with what you asked at my own rhythm. I will first start to explain which distributor we are actually representing, because I understand for a long time now that it is a job that is not very understandable for many. So the distributors that we represent, or independent distributors, are generally very, very, very small to medium enterprises. So it means it's a very, very small team that will go and hunt for films they love. So there is certainly, for most of them in our association, certainly the P of passion that we were speaking about before. So that's, they would release, well, you mentioned Tony Erdmann, that's typically a kind of film they would release. The Square also, but it can also be, well, you said that I was a distributor, I release Lord of the Rings, but I also release Still Life from Yazanke, so from the super big American thing to the tiny, tiny Chinese documentary. That's what they do. Well, so the super big American films that finished, that was 20 years ago, so it's difficult to do it as an independent now. So what they do mostly is reading scripts and then try to translate that in a release, so that when they are reading a story from an author they know of a new one, because they are, of course, always searching for new talent, it's to try to figure out, or with that text, that script, they can then make something, find an audience. We spoke about finding audiences here before. That's typically what they do. So it's really to see, okay, here in Belgium, in Norway, in Portugal, with that story in my hands, can I do something? And then they go for many reasons, because they love the story. They love the author, of course. There is a long generally tradition of following the same authors. I have released so many films of the Dardenne brothers and Ken Loach that, and at the end, it's like family. You know them quite well. And then you go for it. So that means that also, of course, you don't receive the film for free. You have to pay for the rights that you have for a certain amount of time and a certain territory and language, and that's where territoriality makes sense. And then it's like you have your bubble where you can release a film with the expertise you have as a distributor. So that means that actually, for example, well, we were mentioning that Belgium was a complicated thing. Actually, I worked for the Benelux, so it was even more complicated. I was in charge for Belgium and Luxembourg, and I had a colleague in charge for the Netherlands. And for example, we would generally, when we were sharing, I was responsible for the sales, but when we were sharing about the sales, or where, in which theaters we would release the film, the marketing, which poster we would use, generally we would have different ideas. We would prefer something, they would prefer something else. And generally, it would be something else than the French poster or the US one. So it's always something where, you know, you have that expertise of the field where you are working on. And, of course, you use that expertise to promote the film, create the film, find an audience, and hopefully have one. Because, of course, with all this, you have no certainty. You may really believe in a film, put the money on it, do the whatever promotion you can, and then have no one in the theatres. And then if you don't have anyone in the theatres, you don't have anyone anywhere. Because actually, we may be traditional, but actually we don't release only in the cinemas. We generally, independent distributors buy films all rights. So they do release everywhere. But when you want to release a film, and you act as a seller, then you also need a buyer. And that's something that's a place where we may find some problems. It's not because you have a film that everyone wants your film. Of course, when you have a golden pan like The Square, it's a bit easier than when you have a Chinese documentary. And when you have Lord of the Rings 2, it's a lot easier than when you have the one, actually. So you always have to play with that. And for us today, what is for sure is that we are like more traditional, because you hear a lot that now we are making all, you know, admissions in the theaters, but that's not a choice. It's because the rest is gone. So DVD is gone. Well, everyone knows that DVD is gone. Blu-ray never really took. Well, there are still DVDs, but I mean, it's not a proper income. And the problem for the rest is that actually we have still problems to sell to TVs, commercial or public TVs. We have problems to access platforms, or we do access platforms, but people don't know really about them. So it's a very, very vast territory that is a lot linked on promotion. So I think that it's very, 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 very important that, of course, that we have Creative Europe. Without Creative Europe, we wouldn't be able to buy these films or release them. So that's really easy. Without Creative Europe, no circulation. That's math. Really easy. So it's really, really important. But then indeed, probably promotion has really to become something very, very big. So you attract people. Because the thing is that people not always know, because there are so many things to do apart from cinema. You can also read a book, although I watch TV, but also go to the restaurant, whatever. And that's really nice. But so then you have to attract them. And there is so many things to see. And something I have noticed is that when everyone knows about Netflix, I've heard so many times here in Brussels, people asking me, because I'm the local one, Christine, where can we find a nice platform with independent films? I'm just like, oh, you have that one and that one and that one and that one. And actually, they don't know about it. So I think that's certainly something we need. It's also somehow to brand our independent platforms, so that when we have people when our audience knows where to go when they want to see a film in a cinema, when they know where to go when they want to see a film on TV, they actually also know where to go when they want to see a film on a platform. And you can do several ones. It's not that you can go only for one. It's not very expensive, a platform. So that's advanced, certainly as VOD. So that's something that we could do. I think I've answered so many of your questions that I've lost my own thing. So it's very, very important for us that in order to reach out to people, because you never know if you will have some return on the film you have released, it's very, very important to have support like the media one, or like Unifrance that is linked to the CNC, or German film that is linked to Germany, that are helping somehow to lower the risk. Because the thing is that I was saying before, so that now we release essentially on the theatres, but of course the idea is also to be able to release elsewhere, but for that we need to have buyers, we need to have promotion, and to go on and hopefully go back to what we had before, when we were still selling. Because if you are not selling, the problem as a distributor is that if you don't have your money back, you can't go on. That's always a problem with distributors, that they put a lot of money to buy the films, and then there is no money, and you have to go on and keep on buying films, because otherwise, if you have some failures, you're just dead, actually. You need to have always this kind of many things going on, etc. So you have to have the ability to have support to lower the risk. So that's actually what the European Commission and national agencies are doing, but can be certainly improved. Then, of course, because it's a very risky area of business, you can't allow yourself to have more risk. So to go back to your question about territoriality, for us, the thing of territoriality, it is that it's bringing something more on all these risk elements. I'll give you an example. So we are in Belgium. As you said, we are very complicated. We know that. We share languages with many countries around, and bigger countries, because France, for example, if you look at Wallonia, that's what, 4 billion people. France is 60, blah, 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 something million, so the balance is not very right. I mean, there is an imbalance. We haven't annexed France yet. So so the thing is that if you would allow this opening like of the borders on catch-up, the problem is that actually a small Belgian distributor, if he had already the ability to sell to a TV, he will never be able to negotiate something, because anyway, what will happen is that probably a bigger distributor in France would allow his French TV to put not to consider the borders online, and he couldn't do anything for that. And the problem is that here, if you look around, actually people already go to see TV in other countries, and so it would be a very natural movement. I'm taking the example of Belgium because, of course, it's the one I know the best. I'm from here. But it is something real that would happen that you could duplicate with many things. It would be like the first film in English with whatever subtitles put on a TV and catch up somewhere. That could be in the accessible everywhere. So the problem is that because when we sell our rights, we need to have a seller, but then we need to have a bit of money. And that would take off our ability also to negotiate some money, because then instead what would be said, and it's competition, so it's normal. It's just not really, it's very bad for what we do, is that people would say like, the film is already available on Arte, so I'll take it for Belgium, but normally I would take you 10,000, 1,000. And you have to live with that. But the problem is that the rest doesn't change, so you still have to pay. You still have to pay for your promotion, for your film, for the people that are working for you. Actually, fair remuneration is for everyone in the value chain, because if part of the value chain doesn't work, well, then the value chain doesn't work. That's why it's called value chain. Actually, the etymology of it is very interesting. So probably, I mean, the access, the topic about accessibility is also very much valid for distribution, or probably right holders to access platform to be able to take their film and buy them. promotion is also valid. It's our job. We do it. We do it for the release in the cinema, but we do also promotion already for the release, the digital release. Of course, it depends on the country and the agreement and the possibility to pay for that. But what we need also is to know better the VOD world. So we need a lot of transparency because even us, we don't have figures, actually. So when you give your film to an SVOD platform, you don't have the figures. You don't know. They won't give you the information if you have sold the film, which is, of course, the first point. Yeah. You only have the figures on TVOD, but TVOD for more independent films. And the people I represent, generally, apart from the big commercial exceptions, it's more the films that you really have in Berlin or in Cannes or in Toronto. So you see a bit the kind of, I don't know if you see the kind of film, but Berlin and Cannes, I guess you do. So it's like independent films, arthouse, non-arthouse. So it's, of course, a bit different than the very commercial one. So it would be so good to have an idea of what it represents. What is actually the value of a film? Because then also you can negotiate, because now we have no tools to negotiate. So that's also something that is quite complicated. Yeah, no problem. And yeah, and you told me about circulation of the works, but I guess I talked about it. That's our job, actually. When film, and actually I wanted to just to a last thing. We have heard many times a comparison between European films and American ones. Actually, the problem with these figures is that the base one is not accurate because you have on one side the American films that were released in Europe. So you don't take into account all the American films that never crossed the ocean, stayed in America, never were sold anywhere else than America. And while in Europe, we are taking all the films. So, of course, it should not these figures are communicated, they are not comparing the same thing. So it would be interesting to see a little bit if actually the circulation of European works is already very good and could be improved. That's, of course, a certainty. But that maybe actually we are doing better than what we are thinking we do. Voilà.
Merci. Alors ça, c'est un point important, mais peut-être Christophe.
Well, this is an important item, but I guess Christophe Tardieu will broach it. Independent distributors and producers do not have access to the figures of their works on the platforms. I have access to these figures because to compensate authors, well, I have to take into account their results, their performances, but I know that producers and distributors do not have access to these figures. I'd like to thank Christine for her contribution. It reflects her passion for a movie. You know who's the richest man in the world? Jeff Bezos. And when he was asked, why did you buy the copyrights of the Lords of the Ring for $180 million? He said to sell more shoes. Now, Christophe Tardieu is a general director of CNC. He takes part at all the CNC meetings. There are European platforms in between the support bodies. He's one of the main political supporter of audiovisual production. CNC has been able to have all the platforms taxed 3 years ago. Netflix was finally taxed. It took us 3 years to get the approval of the European Commission. Now Germany also taxed Netflix. The last example is YouTube, their advertising revenue will be taxed and will contribute to creation of content. CNC has been very generous because it has left some part of the cake to music. Now, how do you see, because this is a topic of reflection at CNC, how do you see this progressive shift from traditional production, TV production to the digital platforms, and what would be the conditions in which European works could even better thrive? Well, thank you, Pascal. Now, to pay tribute to the commissioner, whose speech was very interesting, I will express myself in French, since her French was perfect, and I'm very happy that French is coming back at the European Commission. Now, before... Now, before answering the question of Pascal directly, let me come back to what the commissioner said. I'd like to tell you that CNC and all my colleagues of the European film agencies welcome her words regarding the budget of the media program. In particular, the media program is a very significant program for us, a very interesting program, and for a French to say good words about a European Commission program is quite an effort. Now, at the beginning, we were quite worried about the risk of having this program included in other programs and therefore made invisible, but this program has taken a very strong place thanks to the media program. There are many films that have been made, many cultural works that have emerged, for example, The Square, which is not a French movie that has won the Palme d'Or in Cannes. I'm thinking also of the network of CSR. Now, the media program is a program that needs to be protected, and we should avoid any budget cuts in this program. There are financials who'd like to cut budgets here and there. They also exist in France. But when we have such a quality program, it would be pitiful to question it or to reduce its budget. I'm quite convinced that the commissioner will be heard and will continue to financially support the media program. Now, the worst would be to include this program in other program and to make it become invisible. Now, as Lucia has said, the media program has to evolve. It is not perfect. Nothing is perfect, and everything needs to evolve according to the context, the environment, the regulations, and it is no exception for the media program that is evolving consistently. Now, the shift of the environment, as Pascal has said, is a systemic shift. 10 or 15 years ago, Netflix was just DVDs that you would put in a mailbox and retrieve at another time. Now, Netflix has taken a huge role. Now, as soon as there are new stakeholders on the market taking such a major place, it is important to have rules so as to avoid dominant positions, so as to avoid abuses, so as to avoid a crushing of the competition that would jeopardize the cultural diversity. We know it, cultural diversity. If we're all gathered here in Brussels in January, it is because we want to promote and protect cultural diversity. For many years now has contributed to the richness, the prosperity of our continent. Now, even the best intents can have pervert effects. We've mentioned the concept of territoriality. Now, as far as territoriality is concerned, we need to think twice before we jeopardize territoriality, because jeopardizing territoriality means destroying value, and it means encourages the strongest. Now, is it something that we want when it comes to cultural diversity? Perhaps not. As for the new rules that are emerging, that are being adopted, these new rules are quite positive. Taxing the platforms in the recipient or the consumption country is indeed something very important. As Pascal has said, we in France have started to tax Netflix. We have started to tax YouTube and other free of charge platforms that contain a lot of videos. This is the case. This has been the case for a few months, and we would be more than happy to share this experience with our colleagues at the European film agencies who would perhaps sooner or later be eager to implement a similar system. As Pascal has said, it is a virtuous system. Unfortunately, if we can use the principle of the recipient country for platforms, it is a pity that it does not go the same for linear services. I'm thinking of a French actor who has relocated in a great country, Luxembourg, from which he broadcasts his linear service. Perhaps he resettled in Luxembourg for the weather, for the good food. But it is a pity that this service that broadcasts a lot in France is not taxed in the same way as Netflix or YouTube are taxed. This is indeed something that we regret. Now, we know that these are very complex debates, exhibiting 30% of works. 30% is better than 20, but worse than 50, as Pascal has said. Françoise Nyssen, the French Minister for Culture, along with her German colleague, has been able to get this percentage of 30% of European works being displayed. Going even further would be excellent news, not so much to defend the cultural exception, as we call it, but rather because we do firmly believe that it is in the interest of these platforms and broadcasters to favor cultural diversity. It is in the interest of such platforms to better to make European works more visible. It is thanks to that these platforms will have new subscribers, will have a wealthier, richer catalog, and by implementing these requirements, well, we have the feeling that we're paying them a service. Perhaps this is not the feeling that the platforms have, but we are quite convinced of this. And I would like to close with one last comment. We have talked a lot about showing our works. At CNC, we have launched an initiative that we are quite happy of. I think that we're all interested in fighting piracy. It is a cancer that ruins our industry, but a lot of people say, I do this because otherwise I would not be able to watch this or that movie. Through two clicks, now you can, on the internet, reach the legal offer on 65,000 films or works. You can have a direct access to the legal offer, which is available on all the platforms that make the film or the work available. And we thought it was a very humble initiative, but quite significant for us because it shows that it is possible through the internet with only two clicks to reach the legal offer and saying, well, I hack because I was not able to find the film does not longer hold. Now, we have also implement an operation system of the follow-up of works. Now, it is a principle that we wanted to apply We do not want right holders or producers to refuse that their works are used and operated by others. It is a mechanism to encourage the use of works, because what unites us today is to make sure that your works, all works, can be seen, can circulate, can be made use of, and can also generate money. Well, thank you, Christophe. I urge you to go on the website cnc.fr. You can enter the name of the artist, the name of the filmmaker, the name of the film, and see if it is available through a VOG, through the website of the CNC. And I would like to thank the CNC for this initiative, because half of the works that were not available in the past can be now more easily accessed. For those of you who see that there are not unexploited works, please voice it. And perhaps the European institutions should fight even more so as to make sure that more works are being seen. Now, I will now give the floor to Viviane Redding. I do not know what she has taken off all these debates. Perhaps she has drawn many lessons. I'd like to thank her in advance for what she has been doing for European creation. I remember when we were together in Bonn, she made a very passionate speech in defending the right to creation, and she got concrete outcomes from the Commission and from the Parliament. Yes, thank you, Pascal. Well, we never work alone. We always work with energy, with ideas, with debates, with a dialogue, but we work together towards one same objective. And when it comes to cultural diversity, I will say words in English afterwards. Just a few words about RTL. No, we're not referring to RTL, but to Chis. RTL is not indeed a platform, but the first radio that was created back in the 50s, in the previous century. You should avoid having RTL chairs. Yes, and RTL was the first one to take advantage of multilingualism.
...of the cultural heritage. And actually what we have today was a lot of respect. We step different means on how this cultural heritage can not only be preserved for what we got in the past, but also preserved of what we have today, because it will be our past tomorrow. And so I was feeling very moved for one element which got nearly unanimity in the two discussions, and that is the media program and open cinema. And what it has mentioned, well, it has mentioned to preserve the aim, the appetite, the happiness to share a film in a cinema. And Europeans have, due to open cinema, managed to have that. And then we're speaking about the platforms, which is a clear new way of promoting the works. And maybe not all, because if I see what is an article of 2016, only 23% of the works on video on the market platforms are European works, 61% are American works, and 14% foreign productions. So that doesn't do. And now, what do if it doesn't do? Well, and you find the source. And maybe the success story of media open cinema leads us to have some kind of cinema for European people. And thank you for the idea, CNC. You see, me at this point might have a new system which will help those who are eager to see the film they have heard about, and we must do hear about the film they want to see, that they can do it also on platforms if the film is not available in cinema theatres anymore. So I would like to stand by also the commissioner for having...
brought forward this idea of having depository of works and becomes, it is very timely, not only because it is it's a year of cultural heritage, but also because it is 10 years since I developed Europeana. Now I see all the question marks in your eyes. Who still remembers what Europeana is? Well, it was, I think, the first platform for cultural goods which had ever been developed in Europe by the Commission in the year 2008. Today it has more than 51 million of artworks, artifacts, books, videos and sounds from across Europe. And there I must say, not because there are so many friends here, but the first one to help me in order to have the pieces of art on Europeana were the French. So, and now the French have this idea of the CNC with the moteur de recherche pour une offre légale. Well, that might really help us to create this European platform for heritage, but in a second step also for the works of art now. And then I have heard what Madame Eloy has told us about the difficulty also to have a promotion of the film, because it's true. You are attracted to go to see a film because there is a promotion, and I must say for the young generation very often because friends have seen the film and they thought it was nice. Because they don't believe so much, for instance, in this all the battage commercial anymore. So we have to see in which way we can do a new kind of promotion for European films on European platforms, can be platforms being put together. It could be a platform also. Well, that I leave it to the professionals, because you are the one who know, and the fact that the commissioner has come here today and spoken not about technology, but about the content which the technology brings to us is a real moment of hope. So you see, the work which has been done over decades by generations for the sake of our cultural heritage is a work which continues. And I think that the feeling, the knowledge, what we are has a lot to do, and there I applaud to what is done by the public broadcasters. It has a lot to do with the roots. But the roots are only valuable if I can share them with others and if I can utilize the roots of the others. So that is the cultural diversity of Europe, which is not going against the roots, but we have to put all this wealth of roots to a platform so that everybody can profit of this wealth. A lot to do. The ways and means, the technological development today is different than what I had at my disposal in 2008, where we were quite at the beginning of the digital development. Now we are in a digital world, and we should utilize it. We should utilize it for bringing around what we are. And nobody can, and that is another French who has said it, Jacques Delors, nobody can fall in love with a market or with a euro, but you can really fall in love with a European film. And that is exactly the message we should give out to this young generation, which will be eager to follow us if they know that there is a way to follow and to precede us and by doing things. And because we never do things alone, because we always do them by exchanging, by learning the one from the other, there is